John, how you doing, man? I think we've been introduced before. I wasn't sure if I ever spoke to you directly, though. How's your day
It's going pretty good. I have a colonoscopy tomorrow, so I'm in the middle. I just started prep an hour ago.
Good luck, my friend. Hope it goes
But
well.
I got my workout this morning, so
Good. What did you
yeah.
train?
What today was, well, it's whole body, but today was my first of two workouts that I do every 3 weeks, every 2 weeks.
Okay.
So it was like incline bench press. We're still doing kind of rehab stuff because I had shoulder surgery 14 weeks ago.
Gotcha. Who are you working with, John?
Greg.
Greg, awesome.
I've been
Greg's
with
the
him like a
man.
year and a half.
How's it going?
Yeah, great.
Doing good? Awesome. Guys, if you can, take yourself off of off screen mode. Love to see your faces. Paul, you're another one I can see there. How you doing, man? You doing good?
Yeah, perfectly fine.
Doing good, man. I think we've seen each other on the call before, never spoke face to face. How's training going?
Fine. Working
Going
towards 7,000
good?
pound club.
Breaking records, making gains.
Yep. Slowly, I'm making it.
That's what it's about, man. It's all about the slow gains. Slow and steady, right? David, you're walking. Love to see you, man. Cut going well?
What's up, Steve? How are you?
Not
Doing
bad,
good,
man.
doing good.
Every time you're walking, it's just you're showing off.
It's
Beautiful
the weather's nice in South Florida, I gotta tell you.
weather out there. We finally got a little bit of it. You must have sent some our way just a little bit because it was like it snowed yesterday, and then right now it's probably like it's like not quite short weather, but it's I could walk around like you and maybe be a little bit cold, but it's better than what we had, so I'm gonna take it.
Good. Get out there.
Richard, how you doing, man? Rob, you guys doing good?
Fantastic. Doing real well. Thank you. Glad to be back. Glad to be back.
Good man, you were away for a little bit?
What's that?
You were away for a little bit?
Yeah. There was about 6 months there I had leave. I had some financial issues with a family member I had to help out, so I couldn't afford to stay on board, but I had to leave for about 6 months. But I came back in January.
Oh, I'm glad you're back, man. I hope everything's okay.
Feeling good, feeling good.
Guys, I'm hoping more people will join just because I'd love for as many people to be on the call as possible because I always try to make these things as applicable to you as possible. I don't have any intention of ever doing one of these group calls where you guys don't take something into your training the next day because we're all here to get jacked. We're all here to get better in life. And like for me, it's always been about application. Application. So can you guys see the screen fine? I'm not sure if you guys are on laptops. Dave, I know you're not walking around with a gigantic laptop. I certainly hope not. So if you can't see, let me know. I'm gonna show you some slides. There's a lot of reading there. You don't have to read it. I'm not gonna read it off. It's more for you guys. I'm just gonna kind of use it as something to keep my mental space in tow so I'm not ranting. But the conversation I wanted to have with you guys today, something I'm always trying to help my clients get better at. And I don't think it ever gets perfect. It's just like you get a little better at it, is understanding progressive overload. Progressive overload through the lens of movement and understanding how movement plays a role with getting progress. One second, you're not scaring me. Nope, Matt, I know I'm not yet. Thanks, though, buddy. Yeah, so when it comes down to movement and understanding that we have to look at moving as a screening for the process of progressive overload, meaning that muscles must undergo tension in order to grow. Okay. So I'm going to share my screen, guys, and we're going to go at it. If anybody has any questions, I encourage you, please take yourself off mute and just interrupt me. Please do, just because I won't stop talking. And I'm not sure if when I'm in share screen mode, if I can see messages. So, Matt, if you're here the whole call, buddy, I'd love for you just to kind of pop up if anybody has any questions. Okay. Okay, hold on a second there, guys. Can you guys see that? You're good. Understanding movement's role in hypertrophy, mastering progressive overload. You guys see that? Same window? Awesome. Love it. Okay, good. So again, feel free to read on. I'm just gonna kind of use this stuff as to something to go through. So when I'm trying to help my clients get stronger and get gains, a lot of it has to come, we have to come at it from the angle of first understanding what hypertrophy is. And hypertrophy is essentially trying to put tension across muscles, trying to elicit a response that grows type 2 fibers, okay? So fast twitch. They're the ones that are going to predominantly be growing. Anything else, any other adaptations, so it could be sarcoplasmic hypertrophy, could be sarcomerogenesis, could be any other adaptation, even strength. It's going to come along naturally anyways. You can definitely prioritize strength adaptations, but that's a different call. That's a completely different conversation. What I want to talk to you about is like understanding really how to exercise correctly so that you can get to this point of just effective and predictable gains. So a good way to think about it in your training, something you guys can take forward right from the very, very get-go of this conversation, is if you were to go into tomorrow's workout, if it's chest, if it's legs, if it's back, what I want you guys to think is like every single exercise, walk in and first ask yourself, what am I trying to train? So what is the actual muscle I'm trying to hit in this exercise? Sounds so remedial, but it's so easy to overlook that because people will not think that, sorry, I'm just admitting somebody. They'll not think that, and instead they'll think I'm rowing or I'm doing a pull down or a bench press. And they're not thinking I'm working my pecs or I'm working my rhomboids or I'm working my lats. Because all those things have different ways of making you become more intrinsically aware. So, first off, it's again, what muscle am I trying to hit in this exercise? The second thing would be, what's the job of the muscle in the exercise? What's it trying to do, right? So, for example, if you're doing a bench press, I'm not sure if you guys can see me as well. Can you see me as well, guys? Yeah? Okay, cool. So, if you're doing a bench press, like we have a couple different forms, like there's not necessarily a right or wrong way, it's depending on your own morphology. But if you're doing a bench press, the bench press, let's just say it's pecs, then the arm, the humerus, is supposed to draw across the midline like that, or what we call horizontal adduction, right? So we're drawing the arm across like that. So are you effectively doing that? Then other things could come into play, like what's your thoracic spine look like? What are your scapula doing to stabilize your arm? There's a bunch of different things like that. Then leads into the next question, which is, how do I know that I'm doing the exercise correctly? Excuse me. So what I wrote underneath there is understanding the moment arms for compound motions can be very, very beneficial because if we use moment arms, and we've had that conversation before, guys, or if we use like machines that kind of take care of this the path of resistance for you, then those are two modalities we can kind of exploit, or it could be filming. But those kind of things can help you understand what muscle is in question. Do you guys ever seen like a squat moment arm? I think I've brought that up to you before on a call. Not sure if you're all there or not. If you guys can visualize a squat going down, actually, I can probably just pop it up 1 second here. I'm a horrible typer, so what? Can you guys see this right here, this video or this thing I'm popping up? Can you see that? Yeah. So that would be understanding a squat moment arm. Why this matters is because if you're trying to train the quads in a squat, right? And that's what I said. What's the thing you're trying to work on? What's the muscle you're trying to work on in the squat? So let's if you said squat is quads, then we're saying, okay, so now what's the quads trying, what are they trying to do in this motion? It would be to extend the knee, right? That would be the whole point of it. So if you look at the moment arm, then we can see this person, his leverage point's always going to be a little bit more glute biased because there's more glutes behind the bar path, right? You can see that center bar path, then there is quads. But the thing is that if he is going through his last couple reps when he's trying to get more of an actual stimulating rep, like the last couple grindy reps where we're seeing an involuntary contraction slowdown, and he starts bending over like that guy does, then we know he's no longer getting the stimulus to the quads. And that's what we would call joint torque. Okay. So we're losing torque at that joint. So we're actually seeing a decrease. Right, so we would actually call that an ineffective rep. Okay, so that's actually a point I bring up later. So again, how do I know that this is being done correctly? Okay, and the last thing is, what are the bottlenecks? What are the bottlenecks you're facing? And this is probably actually this could be an honorable first. Like this could be the first thing you ever address. Some examples of bottlenecks: improper breathing, lack of core stability, lack of mobility in certain requisite joints. That go along with it, the co-contractors, the strength of them. Co-contractors would be like things like the scapula when you're trying to do bench press or lats or something like that. These all will contribute towards your efficacy in sending tension through muscle. An example about a bottleneck people don't think about is how the core actually affects shoulder stability. Have you guys ever seen a buffalo bar? You know what that is? No? I'm going to show you a buffalo bar. Let me see if I can move it up. Barbell. Okay, so this is a buffalo bar. See that guy right here? That's a buffalo barbell. See the bend in it? Okay, so this thing was invented by a guy originally named, I'm not sure if actually it came from him, I'm pretty sure it did, okay, from a guy named Chris Duffin. And the whole thing was because people that tend to squat really heavy tend to have really horrible shoulder mobility. And so he invented a bar that had a curve that goes across the upper traps and rhomboids and rear delts, and so it curves around so you can kind of pull it here. So if you look at me from the front or the side, you see my arms right here rather than being behind. Because if people don't have that mobility in their shoulders, they can come here instead. Why don't they have the mobility there, right? There's a bunch of things. It could be breath work, it could be stuff like that. But that's just a segue to a conversation about how understanding like the core musculature, the diaphragm, and how it affects your shoulders. Because if you're doing certain shoulder mobility exercises, sorry, I have like a hair on my tongue, or exercises that try to access the range of the shoulder, so shoulder flexion, extension, and every single time you get into that press, you deviate and you move through the lumbar spine, then that would be an example about how your core musculature is actually impeding your ability to work the muscle in question, which would be your shoulder. Does that make sense to you guys? So I'm going to go back to this guy right here. So again, what are the bottlenecks? Another example of that would be like pelvic stability when you're trying to work your quads, ability to get in a deep squat or a deep lunge or something like that, a deadlift, for example. If you can stabilize your pelvis, you're going to work the muscles rather than your lower back. If you can't, you're going to hurt your lower back. So your ability to put tension through quads is actually not based on how strong your quads are. It's actually based on how good your core is and how good your pelvic stability is. And that's really important because muscles will only grow as much as we can put tension to them. And if your tension is limited because your pelvic stability sucks, then it doesn't matter about how many reps you do with your quads, doesn't matter. They'll never grow. They will only grow to the point of the strength that you've achieved with them. And that strength is bottlenecked based on the core stability, okay? So when it comes down to movement mastery, it's really important to take a muscle-centric approach. I use that term because Ben talks about that a lot, and it's something I was hoping you guys have heard before. So a muscle-centric approach to training is just letting go of moving weight from A to B. Instead of, again, thinking, I need to move this squat or this barbell or pull this row from A to B, we're thinking instead, I need to make sure that I'm working this muscle across its path in this exercise. So that brings us back to that first point I said before, right? So what I can suggest for you guys is, I know it sounds a little bit condescending, but I actually don't mean for it to be like that. This is what I do. Google it. If you don't know what the actual muscle is supposed to be doing or the point of the exercise it is, just Google it, right? And then again, film your set so you can actually validate you're doing that. A good example of that would be like if you're doing a T-bar row. A lot of people, I've seen a lot of pros do this. Like if you're doing a T-bar row overhand or something, it's probably for your mid back, maybe a little bit lats, but you're pulling like that and you're trying to get scapular traction and pulling, right? So you're trying to get that scapula to move. So if you guys are free, can you guys do that? Can you have the ability to do that? Move your, if your arms are nice and straight like that, try to move only your scapula. Can you guys do that? Yeah, so if you can move only your scapula and elbows do not bend, elbows stay straight the whole time. If anything, try to flex your triceps so your elbows do not bend. Can you do that, right? And a lot of people can't. And what'll happen in a T-bar row is when they pull, they'll bend the elbows and then they'll go like this. And their wrists kink because the muscles in the mid back aren't strong enough. And so imagine this person who's going through a T-bar row as an example, and he's trying to progressively overload it. He's trying to use progressive load as a tactic to ensure that he's growing and getting stronger and getting gains. And he's unaware of the point of the exercise first, but he doesn't understand what the muscle does. Then he's saying, okay, well, I'm making the rep because I'm pulling the bar here. But his row looks like that rather than like this, right? And then he keeps on adding reps, keeps on adding weight. And then eventually, A, he just plateaus, which is what usually happens. B, he starts getting joint pain. That's another option, like elbow tendonitis, wrists, forearms get hurt, biceps get pumped. You guys ever had like a forearm pump from a back exercise? Stuff like that, right? Exactly, right, Keith? And so like that kind of stuff starts happening. And then we're wondering why. It's like, well, it's because the other muscle's not working. It's not anybody's fault. It's just they don't understand what the point of it is. So that's why we talk about things like leaving ego at the door, because the exercise isn't from A to B. It's understanding like, no, we're trying to actually work that muscle. I do believe there's a time for ego in the gym. I actually think that that's a really good thing to employ sometimes, and having exercises that you do supremely work efficiently in, like a deadlift or a squat, where maybe it can be standardized to, or sorry, put in your program to just move a lot of weight because you're good at it. Cool. There's a lot of times for that. But right now, when it comes from a muscle-centric approach, it's like, what's the muscle doing? How do we get into that so that when you get into a point where you're getting to try to get a, like a muscle hypertrophy signal, then you can predict that that's going to happen. So when you do 5 reps, every single one of those reps is stimulating. So you know that now you've actually stimulated what you need to get muscle growth. It's going to happen. So now you just need to eat, go home, wait, next week, come back stronger, put 2 pounds on, right? Yeah. So the next thing, slowing down, adhering to tempo parameters. And these kind of things, like people think that tempo is one thing. What I'm going to tell you guys right now is probably not what you're going to want to hear. Tempo doesn't do what people think it does. It doesn't make you grow. Tempo just helps you standardize movement, right? Attempt like a pause squat is only going to make you work harder in a squat with less weight. Does that make sense? So if you can squat 400, if I was to say, okay, make the eccentric 10 seconds long, are you squatting 400 now? Nope. So then we've lowered tension off the muscles. Is that a bad thing? Not necessarily. If you're a great squatter, I would say it's a horrible idea, because now I'm just bottlenecking your squat for no reason. If you're good at it, let's load you up. But if a person breaks down and they do that stripper fault like I showed before, might it be a good idea to maybe bring some tempo in? Absolutely. Like, let's bring some tempo in. Let's make them pause in certain ranges. Even at the point where the person wants to shift back in the hips, pause. Pause on the concentric. Make them regain position. This kind of stuff can be beneficial, right? So that's why we have tempo. It's actually to control and standardize movement so that when we're trying to get into an effective reps model, every single rep is the exact same, okay? So if our goal is movement mastery and eventually leveraging progressive overload, then we need to standardize movements in every single rep. I'm going to just pause right there before I get into bottlenecks. Do you have any questions yet, guys? Show goes on. Okay, so muscle development hinges on our ability to increase amounts of tension that go through the muscle at work, okay? This is predicated upon the stability of the co-contractors. Again, something people don't think about. What I want you guys to think about is that your muscles will never fail. Okay? Your muscles in question will not fail. Nobody rips a quad in the middle of their quad. Nobody tears a bicep in the middle of the bicep. Nobody tears the pec here. They tear at the origins insertions. Okay? It's usually the insertion. Make sense? It's always away. It's not in the middle of the muscle. Nobody tears that. It's very, very rare. I'm sure it's happened, but it's very, very rare. The muscles you're trying to work will always be able to do what they need to do. It's the stability that will not happen. It will prevent you. So is hypertrophy even about trying to chase work, or is it trying to chase stability? I would say stability. Okay? We know that because every single person and their dad can hop into a leg press and leg press way more than they can squat. Why? Because a leg press is way more stable than a squat. Okay, you're locked in. I remember when I was a kid, my older brother would try to beat me up. I had a door in my bedroom where, like, the door, I'd close it, and in front of the door would be the wall, and I could put my legs against the wall, and I could put my back against the door, and he could never get in. And he was so pissed off that I learned how to do that because he was older than me and he was really big. And so he tried to beat me up and break through this door, and I'm like, you're not getting in. No matter what he would do, he cannot get in because I could like press that door and he would not get in. So stability matters, right? And that's the whole point. It's like you can't out-train it. When it comes down to increasing stability at the ranges of the joints, though, or sorry, the ranges, sorry, just the joints, that's a really it's a really tricky thing for people who aren't kind of like in this field to understand, which is why I would really, really encourage you guys to leverage your coaches. Right? Lean on them. If you're feeling like you can't do something properly, if you're feeling specifically weak, if you're feeling like there's joint pain, these things are all indicative of a problem underlying, okay? Especially weakness, because weakness, you shouldn't be weak. That's a big thing people don't want to hear. But really, again, your muscles have the ability to do what they want. They really do. So it's about that stability. So another good example again is like the pelvis when you're doing a squat, your barbell squat. If you go down and your pelvis goes into an anterior tilt, I'm sure you guys have heard of that. You're never going to get your quads loaded. You're just going to load your lower back, and you're probably going to hurt it, right? So again, your quads weren't even working. They weren't even in question. It was just a lower back motion. It was a posterior chain kind of pursuit, and it was a really bad one too. I had somebody ask me that once. They're like, "Well, if you do an exercise wrong enough, then wouldn't you adapt in the thing you did wrong?" I'm like, "Yeah, you would. It's just that what happens is if a squat's a mediocre to good quad exercise, it's a horrible back exercise. So then you're gonna get horrible back gains at best, or you get some good quad gains. So what do you want to do, right?" That's the whole point. It's like understanding that, yeah, like anything. You could work your shoulders with a barbell curl, but it's a really horrible shoulder exercise. So the whole point is to try to chase stability and get better at movement so that when you get to the point where you're trying to add weight, you know that every single rep is encouraging some kind of stimulating rep. Okay? And then those stimulate, we'll get into that in a couple minutes. So getting rid of the bottlenecks, all right there is it's predicated upon the stability of the co-contractors, joints, tendons, and the ability to access range of motion and the exercises chosen. And then, honorable mention, high degree of intention to your individual morphology. So that's a different conversation. I want to put that in there though, because if you guys have been to a camp with Ben, or if you've seen him talk about this online, that's something he goes into very often about understanding, like, hey, you could be doing a bench press perfectly, but if your sternal angle, for example, is not going to help you in that position, then you're working your shoulders. And that would be a good example of that. But yeah, so. When it comes down to bottlenecks, the common ones we see in here, obviously movement. Movement's like an overarching theme, but what is movement breakdown? Movement breakdown, and again, a lot of people don't like when I say this kind of stuff, but movement breakdown, weakness, people think it's a skill pursuit. Skill in the weight room is strength, okay? Like it's very rarely skill like practicing cards because there's no muscular adaptation that needs to happen when you're building a card castle or doing a card trick. It's a skill. It's actually like a brain thing. When we're chasing hypertrophy, everything in the weight room is muscle strength. That's the whole point. And anybody wants to argue and say that like they think that there's some kind of skill adaptation towards making your 100 max better, I would just encourage them to go watch Eddie Hall make a mockery of the clean and jerk world record because he's so strong. And yeah, so he's stronger than anybody. He'll just throw it around. I had somebody ask me that before. They were asking me like, well, how do I get better at like an Olympic lift? Oh, I'm sorry. It was actually there was different examples. Sorry, somebody talking about Mark Rippetoe, and he's not a very smart guy, but he had this point nailed. And the person was like, "How do I get stronger in Olympic lifting?" And the person said, "Get your deadlift up." And he was like, "No, I got to get better at my motion." And he's like, "No, you don't. You got to get your deadlift up." He goes, "Well, why would that be?" And he goes, "You're gonna tell me that if you're trying to approach a 300-pound clean and jerk, and you can only deadlift 320." Versus getting your deadlift up to 500, it's not going to help. Of course, it's going to help. That bar is going to feel so much lighter in your hands if you can deadlift 500. That's the whole point. Like, strength is the pursuit here. Yeah. So just don't forget that. But yeah. So examples of bottlenecks: the diaphragm, it's a huge one. The core, breathing, spinal stability. But really understanding the correlative effects downstream. I really want to get that point in your head, guys. Like, let's just use the shoulders, right? Imagine I'm doing like a shoulder press here. The shoulder press is trying to move this, right? I'm trying to move this. I'm trying to leverage my upper back as stability, my scapular positioning. So if my arm's here, my elbow's underneath my wrist, pushing through like that, I should be able to bring it here. If I'm pushing here, like that, and that's my only range of motion, then my brain's gonna say, I need this up, right? I'm gonna go lower back to the rescue, right? And then every single time I do that, my back's gonna say lower back to the rescue. And yeah, maybe I don't get hurt. Maybe I never get hurt. But then what happens is my range of motion, my shoulder is stuck here. I never develop beyond it because I never have trained that, right? So that's the important thing to understand. It's like if you have a weak core, it could actually have massive downstream effects. It'll prevent you from accessing the ranges needed to work the muscle. Does that sit at home with you guys? Do you understand that? A lot of people think that like core training, breathing is like this hippy dippy stuff. I know me and David laughed about that a bunch, but it's really effective in understanding why we do it. And the why is like the first, if we understand the breath, we understand proper pelvic and proper thoracic positioning. And then if we understand that, then we can get into more of an understanding about how that will play a role in what we call neuromechanical matching. But for you guys, it means muscles will turn off or turn on based on positioning. And we know that because that's loadability 101, right? If you put your arm out to the side like that, your delt turns on, right? We know that. Like, put your arm to the side. It's not like your calf turns on, it's your delt. We know that. So same kind of thing. If you stand on your toes, what happens? Was it your pecs that turn on? Was it your calf? It's obviously your calves. So same kind of thing happens to the diaphragm in terms of your core. If you're breathing properly, you can get your core musculature to turn on. So this will have, again, downstream effects. So it's absolutely crucial to understand that your ability to effectively pursue hypertrophy as a likely outcome from your training will be directly affected by your understanding of stability's role in exercise. To elicit the response you want, which is essentially effective reps. Okay, so overhead shoulder pressing movement—that's what the one I said right there—and over leveraging lumbar extension for range of motion. As an example, another example would be the pecs, mid back, or lats in proper thoracal sternum positioning and stability of the scapula. Massive. I would say the two things that I hear the people coming in here for muscle is, I want, back muscles, lats, or I want chest muscles. That's what guys want, right? And both those things that either do with, spinal stability or scapular stability. So right there, again, if you want to grow your pecs, guys, if you can take this way, don't even worry about growing your pecs. I've never once tried to grow my pecs in a pec exercise. I'm consistently thinking about squeezing my back. That's the only thing I think about in a pec exercise. Because I always make the joke to my one-on-one clients that I work with. When they're down here in a bench press, I'm like, don't worry. It's not like you're gonna forget what to do when you're here. You're not gonna come down and be like, oh, what do I do now? Do I push? It's like, no, you bite the barbell. Like, what do you do? Like, come down, you squeeze your back, contract, right? But if you come down here and you're not thinking, squeeze my back, and you go, oh, you ever seen that? The shoulders come forward and they round, and you just anterior dump. Now it turns into an anterior delt exercise and a tricep, right? And again, it's a shitty motion at that at best. So if we're thinking, hey, that's the position we want, that mid back tightness, it stretches the pec, contract through, you're going to get a lot more benefit from that exercise, okay? Pelvic stability and femoral and foot stability through the motion of the quads. Yeah, so that's a big one too, guys, because if you look at the quads, if you look at a Bulgarian split squat as an example, everybody loves those, everybody hates them, pretty sure it's the latter. When you're doing those, the next time you're doing those, guys, honestly, think about tucking your pelvis. Try to think about pulling your butt to your hamstring. Close your ribs down. Everybody cough right now. What happened to your abs? Do you notice how your abs fell down on your pelvis a little bit? Okay, so that would be what we call like proper positioning of your thoracic spine or your thorax over your pelvis, right? Do that and then breathe into that position and brace it whenever you're trying to do anything for your legs. And you're gonna notice that that takes your leg training to like new degrees because you won't be leveraging your lumbar spine anymore. And you'll be centering your pelvis so you can actually move through your hip joint better. Because if you're trying to get into a deep lunge or a deep squat and you're in this high extension in the lumbar spine or the pelvis isn't stable, then you're never gonna access the full range of motion the femur has, right? And again, anybody wanna take a guess at what the muscle that works that's on the femur is? It's the quad, right? If you can't move it, you're not gonna grow it. So progress overload. I'm going to stop right there, guys, just before we get into progress overload. Does that make sense? Everything from movement. I want you to guys to kind of chime in here. Did you guys understand that kind of stuff before I talked about it? Was there anything in there that you didn't know, or was there anything that was kind of standout-ish? Go for it, Keith.
Steve, I've got a yeah. I mean, that was really awesome. Again, kind of bringing it together. There's a few kind of things. Obviously, being on the program for a while, there's a few bits I pick up, and but putting together the way you did that was awesome. But is there value in? I mean, there is, but it's like in a world where we don't have a coach there all the time. How can we understand? Like, obviously, we can film ourselves and look at how it should look on a video, but is there like, I mean, I know if you read and spend hours looking at how things work, like let's say your example of the shoulder press, and I'm bending, like, is it worth looking at a musculature diagram to look at what works, or how can we kind of work out where we're starting to fail, like if we're feeling like it's not right or it doesn't look right or we've hit a plateau, like is there a first step where it's, start from point X and work forward?
I think that's a great question, man. So I think that there's two overlapping thoughts there. First off, is actually it's a, almost like a morphology question in disguise, He's like, if you don't know your own body, and it's really hard to know that. Sometimes you just don't know, right? So for me, like when I do like bench pressing, for example, like a flat bench press, it's pretty good for me, but it's almost like a decline. But it's still kind of like between flat and decline. And then incline is like flat to incline. It's not quite an incline like a lot of people would have. I have to do high incline shoulder press for my upper backs, or I have to do like a really low arm, almost flatten my sternum and do that kind of stuff for my pecs, and then it, like actually just horizontal adduction, and I get more upper pecs. So when we do that and we know that kind of stuff, that's again, it's understanding your own body, and just you can use a lot of more anecdotal stuff for that. Meaning, like, what do you feel? And that's when I actually would lend to that. Where do you feel this contracting? It doesn't always work though, but that could be a time to kind of leverage that. The next thing would be, going back to the first thing I said was like, what muscle are you trying to work? Because regardless of whether or not you feel it, you can still ask that question. That comes down to loading, because loading will solve the question regardless of feel. And when we're using proper rep ranges, which what we're going to go into next, stimulating reps, if you're trying to get into an optimal program, which is pretty much all the craze these days, then feeling will go away. You'll never really feel that, because when we're talking about feeling, we're talking about metabolic stress, or we're talking, well, presence of metabolic stress, or we're talking about metabolite recruitment, or we're talking about lactate buildup. These things are all feeling centric, right? And when you're doing 5 reps, you don't feel anything. You just kind of just stops. Like your muscles like, I'm done, and then just kind of throws in the towel, and you're like, all right, well, I guess I can't hold it anymore. But you have to kind of have faith that that's working, and we do know to some degree it will, because like I've said before, if you're doing a row, it's not like your calf turns on. We know that, right? It's the back muscle. So your pursuit of squeezing slow and stuff like that, it won't be necessary. It doesn't mean it's not necessary when you're practicing. When you're practicing, it's absolutely necessary, because you do need to understand what you're doing. People just take it too far, right? And again, I'm trying not to say too much because I want to go into this with you guys, but it's an understanding, what are you trying to work? Right. And then ask yourself, what is the job of that muscle? Because then if you ask that, like, what is the job of that muscle? Certain, regardless of your morphology, muscles do have a role. So like I said, the pecs, it's, if you think of like the pecs in origin, it's gigantic. It's like this massive origin crest here. So your humerus and its ability to come across here, right? And then do this, like that's what it's doing. It's interacting with your rib cage. So your ability to do that is what's going to grow your pec, right? And if a person can't do certain thing, then it's a pursuit of, what are you trying to do? Are you trying to get into that position? Why? Does it suit? Is it actually an aesthetic thing? It could be. Like somebody's like, I'm gonna grow my upper chest. Like, well, why? I don't know. They don't have a reason. It's like, well, they may have a great upper chest. Maybe they may look great. Maybe it's actually not about that nimbus range of motion. Maybe they just have a hard time with getting their arms over their head, right? Stuff like that could matter. But that would be the question, because then you can pursue it, and then you can use that information to say, can I do this? Like, is it actually in my body's vocabulary to do this motion? Certain motions just don't work for certain people. We all do have different, again, morphology. We don't have different muscles. We have the same muscles. That's kinesiology, right? Like we all have biceps. We all have quads. We all have hamstrings. They all attach in the same spot. They all do the same thing. But how we work with them, because of our bodies being so slightly different, is very different. A great example of that is if you train a guy with short femurs, like it's one of the easiest things to grow their quads. It's just like, move your leg. And then the quad's like, burr. And then if you train a person with long femurs, you're like, please don't hurt your back. Please don't hurt the whole time. Anything they do, it's like lower back. Yeah, that's what, or it's glutes. Everything is glutes and lower back. So it's like, yeah, cool. But it's like, oh, and that's, again, that's kind of like what you're saying, right? Meaning like they try, and like, how do you know you're doing it right? So I would start there, man. Just, yeah, I don't think it's ever a bad thing. I know it's kind of the question that nobody wants to hear. They have to do research, but I think it's empowering, because then you get this information for the rest of your life, and you can kind of go into it and be like, well, what do I want to do? How do I do this better? How do I load it better? How do I pursue this to a point where I can really learn my own body and be like, yeah, they know that the evidence says this, but I've seen this anecdotally to be true with myself.
Awesome, Steve. Thanks, man.
Yeah, man, of course. Please keep asking questions. Love it. Is there anybody else any questions? I'd love to just let you guys pick my brains just before we go on. You guys all good? Okay, so progressive overload. I wanted to write this down for a reason. What progressive overload is, tracking and progressing in weights and reps. What progressive overload isn't, just tracking and moving up in weights and reps. Okay? That's why it's so confusing, right? People don't understand it because what they do is they try to do this and they don't understand that this is actually just a result of doing the stuff I just talked about properly. Right? You guys ever heard that phrase, when you chase money or you chase women, they run? Right? It's true, right? It's true. The same thing with muscles. When people chase gains, they run. When you chase the pursuit of the motion and exercise mastery, gains happen. That's how it works. You will grow, right? Because you'll move effectively. And that's what progressive overload is. It's understanding that you're trying to chase the natural pursuit of growth. Just in terms of like, hey, this muscle needs tension. I'm gonna get my bicep to move through this position, and I'm just gonna keep on doing that until it can't do it, and then I'm gonna get better at it and load it optimally. Muscle's gonna grow. Whereas if you pursue progressive overload, it's like, I'm gonna get more weight, I'm gonna get more weight, and then just keep on doing that. It's like, well, what's that gonna do? You're pursuing the weight, you're pursuing the reps, and then it turns into weight and reps at all costs, right? Which is it's a stupid philosophy at best, because even if it was proper, it's like, well, okay, so then if you moved up 5 pounds this week, you have to bicep curl again in 3 weeks, or sorry, in 3 days. And then you're gonna do this for the rest of your life. So if you've moved 5 pounds already, where are you gonna be in 6 months? Bicep curling 1 million pounds a hand? Like, what's the actual logical pursuit here, man? Like, and people don't, like, I don't know. It's just the same kind of thing as when people say you don't need heavyweight to lift, they need lightweight. I'm like, well, how light? Right? And they're like, well, I don't know. I'm like, well, if you think it's like 20 pounds, well, why not 2 pounds? Why not this Coke can? Just curl that. Why not even just curl nothing? Why not that? It's like, because again, there has to be something that people can seek to, because it doesn't make sense. The point of growing muscles is it's a strength adaptation. It's just that we do it for like 5 to 8 reps, whereas the neurological pursuit of it, where that being like the focus in powerlifting sports, it's the 1 to 3 reps. Okay? So when the movement becomes standardized, we can start to understand how a stimulating reps model can become valuable in our pursuit of hypertrophy. Mechanical tension, being the driver of hypertrophy, is best seen through the involuntary slowing of contraction, or when used in maximum loads, the inability to accelerate contractional forces. I'm just going to stop right there. Do you guys get that? Okay, mechanical tension is best seen through the involuntary slowing of contraction when using maximal loads being anything you cannot, I would say, I'm going to say 8, doing more than 8 of, right? Or you cannot accelerate it through the contraction. Okay, so let's use the barbell analogy. If you grab a barbell that's weighted heavy enough, it's like, right? You know that? You wouldn't be able to go, whoop! Like, you wouldn't be able to move it faster. Every rep, no matter how hard you try, is slow. And then they get slower. Does that make sense? Okay, so that would be what we would call a stimulating rep. Okay, that's how we witness that we're in stimulating reps, mechanically loaded reps, because you see involuntary contraction slowdown, which is ironically, I think this is the funniest thing, because this is like, it's almost like the science goes back to the bro science. And excuse me, Mattia, guys, us bros love this because it really basically means you can't be a baby in training. Because guess what reps suck? The ones that slow down. And that's the truth. It's like, if you want to grow, you have to learn to literally live there. Live in the reps that slow down, because that's where the growth actually happens. So it's really cool how muscles contract, essentially have pulling forces, where the fibers within the fibers and the molecules within them, they pull on themselves, and there's actually like a slow contractional velocity happening within the muscle itself. And that's what happens when we witness that slow contraction. Okay. So guys, lean on that, watch. And I've suggested before, film your sets and actually watch it, because sometimes we mentally feel like it's like that muscle slowed down. And if you film your set, you'll be like, wow, nope, I was being a baby. And I've called myself out times before. I'm like, yeah, that was not slow enough. And I was like, okay, I need to work harder. And then what you do is you put on 2 pounds and you're like, okay, there we go, there it is. And you actually do feel it. Okay. So if we use maximum loads, 5 to 8 reps, you can essentially work within one rep. RIR is rep in reserve. You can work within one RIR and see all the benefit. that you would if you were to go to failure. I put an asterisk here because this whole line is predicated on the fact that we all on this call know how to work hard. Okay? Because I've had people, and I'm not lying here, but I've had people who I've told them to load up in front of me on something like a hack squat, like the weight that they would do for like 8 reps, and they proceeded to get 60. So if that's true, they're working negative 48 reps or like 50 reps. You know what I mean? Like, what? Like, you have an RIR 50? Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, you have to be working really hard for this kind of stuff. And then we can leave the last rep off. Fun fact for you guys, when we're trying to stimulate new muscle, we can't grow muscle that isn't stimulated. Okay. It doesn't work. Like, we have to recruit muscle in order to grow it. If you can curl 30 for 8, from here on out, the curse you have as a power and strength athlete forever is that you'll never grow with 30 for 8 anymore. That's how it works. Okay. You may grow from 30 for 9. You may grow for 30 for 10. You may grow for 30 with 8 slower. You may grow from 30 for 8 in a different way. But the same way, it's done. You've done that work. Okay. That's why we have progressive overload. Okay. You're trying to increase upon your previous bout of training. Okay. Make gains. That's what we're trying to do. Okay. A muscle that gets stronger grows. Okay. A muscle that grows gets strong. That's how it works. Okay. This is what we talk about. This is what we're trying to get into with stimulating reps. Okay. So when is training to failure a good thing? This basically, if you guys want to read it, read on to that. Basically, it just means when you know that you're not a baby, and when you also know that you're not in your first bout of training. And I don't mean for them to be linked because I don't believe that everybody intrinsically is like a baby, because we've all been a baby and we all will be a baby in the future, and that's okay. There are people who just, I think, need to understand that training's hard. And that's why I laugh all the time when the whole Ronnie Coleman, like, nobody wants to lift the heavy weights kind of thing. Because it's true. So when should you train a failure? When you know you aren't, okay? When should you not train a failure? When you know you are. Does that make sense? Those who know they are probably can back off. The cool thing about failure, why motoring your recruitment is such something I would encourage you all to learn a little bit about if you really are interested in maximizing your progress in the gym, is that would you all agree that when you're doing the last rep, the very, very last rep, to absolute failure, it feels different? You know, that last rep, it feels different, right? Yeah, can I get some nods? It feels different. So that feeling, it's actually true that that feeling is actually your brain's loss of the ability to recruit high threshold motor units. That's what you're feeling. You're feeling an inability to recruit the high threshold motor units that are needed to move the weight. That's why it's slow. That's why it's slowed down. Okay. There's also a quality to the rep when you're seeing somebody, you're spotting them, that it almost shudders. You ever had that where it's like your body almost like loses it and it almost goes back down and you have to fight through it? And that's not necessarily a good thing. It's not always a bad thing, but it's not necessarily good. People just think it's good. The reason why the rep is slowing down and actually going to that point where it's almost inversely losing momentum is because, again, your brain is losing access to the high threshold motor units that it previously had to curl. So what did I say earlier? If it had access to them to grow them, now it doesn't. Is it going to grow in that rep? No. Because the muscle's not there anymore. It's gone. You're not accessing it. Okay? And then all that happens from that point on is fatigue. Okay? Fatigue. So if somebody comes over and spots you, and like, Keith, you're doing a set on leg press, and like, it's just harder. And I'm like, five more. And I'm pushing, and I'm just doing like tricep work now. And you're like, oh, and you're just dying, and you're sweating, and you're like dying, you're cursing to me. This has turned into a cardio session. This has turned into me getting calories out of Keith. Your legs are gonna get a sweet pump, but nothing's happening because the muscles that we need to grow to increase my last time's training session, right? They're not at work anymore. You're only accessing the work you've done to grow the muscle so far. So kind of like a simpler analogy would be like if you can curl 30 pounds for 8, and then today I'm gonna get you to curl 40 pounds for 5. And you're like, I've never done that. And you do it, right? And then I'm like, okay, now grab the 30s and do 8. It's like that's not going to grow your muscles. You can do that. See what I'm saying? Like the muscle that's needed to do that job, you already have that. That's why you can do it, and that's why you're going to feel those fatigue effects because now it's no longer a muscle thing. It's actually a cardiovascular thing, or it's a metabolite recruitment thing, or it's a fatigue thing. And it's just a mental badass training. It's like how much suffering can you endure? And none of it matters for growth. Okay? Make sense? It's just going to decrease upon your training as it goes on. These things have been proven to be beneficial, though, when you're in the earlier phase of your training. In the people's first 6 months, 9 months, it can be beneficial for sure, especially length and stuff. Okay? So again, it's not that training to failure is bad. It's just that there may be a better choice, right? And yeah, so it's just meaning like if you're not a novice, just don't necessarily lean on it because straight effective sets, max and loaded, are always going to be best for you, okay? Dun, dun, dun. Tracking progression. A muscle that grows gets stronger. Ooh, what did I do? I moved that over. You may get stronger from neurological adaptations. Again, neurological adaptations are happening all the time and they happen actually faster than we think. They can actually happen in the set themselves. You ever had like a rep? The first rep you botched, second rep was awesome. You ever had that? That's your brain learning. Your brain's faster and better at learning than you think it is. And it can learn literally intra-set. Okay? You can come back after one set and do the second set better. I've always noticed on my squats, if I do four sets of squats, my third set's usually the best one. And then my fourth one, I kill myself and I die. Because it's like, okay, then you're like, okay, now I'm tired. And it might be correlated. It's like maximum recruitment. That's why it's the best. And it's like, hey, you spent all that. You ever played like an RPG where you have like mana or magic power, and then like you have full magic power and you're like, cast spell, and then you try it again, you're like, I have none. And that's exactly what happens in like squatting. You're like, okay, so I had the power for the squat, that's why the last set was awesome. Then you're like, okay, fourth set's gonna kick ass. And you're like, I have nothing left. That's exactly what happens. Like, 'cause it's a brain thing. That's what I'm trying to get across to you guys. Getting that training stimulus, that adaptation, it comes from here. It's not a willpower thing. That can help, okay? But it's not it, okay? So, you may get stronger from neurologic adaptations and skill, and maybe even just like dealing with discomfort. That's what I was trying to say with the whole baby thing. Like, people just don't understand it. It's not like it's a quality I'm describing of a person. It's more the fact that they've never done it. Meaning, like, there's a suck factor. Anybody who's doing cardio, Rob, you're doing cardio. Like, there's a suck factor to cardio, right? It doesn't mean it's bad. It's just there's a suck factor. And people who don't do cardio, they think for some reason that they are almost entitled to like holding on to that suck factor more, like, oh no, I hate cardio. You don't understand. I'm like, no, we all hate cardio. That's the point. But as you get better at it, it's almost like you adapt to that suck factor. Same kind of thing with lifting heavy. It's always heavy. That's the point. Like if you start deadlifting for the pursuit of the world record, deadlifts don't get easier. Deadlifts are harder. That's what I always find amazing. The people will say, like, oh, you're gonna hurt your back. It's like, no, because you get stronger. But the people who can't deadlift at 100 pounds, it's not harder for them to deadlift 100 pounds than it is for somebody to deadlift 1,000. It is harder for the person to lift 1,000 pounds. That's why it's 1,000 pounds, right? And it doesn't feel easier. It's weird. You just feel that? Like, that's a really important thing to realize. People think for some reason that when people cannot deadlift 100 pounds, it's harder for them. I'm like, no, it's harder for the person who can deadlift 500 pounds to deadlift 500 pounds. That's called gravity and it's called physics, right? And we need more muscle to do it. That's why it's heavier. So that's what it's about, right? We need to get into that kind of stuff. And we need to understand that there's some things like neurological adaptations, discomfort adaptations, motivational bursts that go along with it. And like, if you're not motivated, you're not going to lift it. That's the whole point, right? So these things can help you get stronger. The reason I'm mentioning them is because when you're tracking progression, sometimes you'll have these in your week. You'll be like, sometimes I'm sure it's happened to all of us, happened to me. You're like having 1 week and tracking's going great. And then like what happens is you're not motivated and like tracking goes down that week. You're like, what? I didn't hit my weights and reps from this week. What happened? Nothing happened. So you're not motivated. Something happened. Maybe you're having a fight with your wife or something, right? And then you track next week and then something happens, you actually break records. You're like, that doesn't make any sense. Which is why it's no different than pursuing weight loss. When you guys do weight loss, is it a consistent line down? No, it's like this, right? And then you zoom out, and what happens? It's a straight line, right? But you zoom in, and it's like, and that's tracking progress overload. You're seeing weights and reps drop and stuff like that, and that's our job. Is I've always referred to coach as almost like when you're walking through a corn maze, and you guys walk up. You guys are walking up to the corn maze, and it's not even a corn maze. It's just a wall of corn. And you're like, I'm gonna go through and make this fight. I'm like, you can, and I hope you get there. But I have a path, and I open up the corn maze, and I'm like, I can show you an easier way. And you look at me, and I'm like, because I've done that, and I have these scrapes and scratches, and I'm bleeding, and I'm like, I've done that walk. You can learn from my mistakes, and that's kind of what we do, right? So same kind of thing, like tracking, progressing, so you don't get those highs and lows so much. I'm going to even the process out for you, okay? So progression is simply just ensuring that the muscle in question can do the job within the selected exercise, standardizing the movement, working within 4 to 8 reps, and adding a rep or a bit of weight each week. And again, guys, that sounds so simple, but the amount of times I've tried to—that's like putting broccoli on a 2-year-old's plate right there. Nobody wants to understand how beautifully simple it is, right? Like people just don't want to hear it because they'll say, "Well, what's the point in 2 pounds?" I've had people go to a hack squat and they'll literally leave it empty and they'll say, "I can't do any more." I'm like, "You can't do more." So if I told you take off your shoe and hang it on the end of the hack squat, you'd die? Well, no, I wouldn't. Okay, so then put your shoe on it and then track one shoe, right? And what we're really dealing with is embarrassment, right? Because literally put 2.5 pounds on each side of the hack squat and they'd feel embarrassed. I'm like, what's 2.5 times 52 weeks? Right? Little more than 104 pounds a year. When is the last time any of us increased the lift by 104 pounds in a year? That's incredible progress. Like incredible. Like not little. That's freaking fantastic. Anybody past like their first year would die for that kind of result. And people don't think that it's worth it to put 2 pounds on, right? 2 pounds is incredible. You might not even get it sometimes, right? So what I would suggest you do is just consider trying to make sure that you get a little bit of weight or one rep. Add it on each week and just stay simple. Don't outrun your adaptations. Outrunning your adaptations is usually something that happens from not paying attention to the stuff we talked about in the beginning of the call. So, like outrunning your adaptation would be like paying no attention to movement quality. A good exercise, usually exercises that you see that happen with are ones that are not stable. It doesn't mean they can't happen with stability ones too, but just picture like a bent over barbell row. Somebody's rowing and they're just pulling the chest up into it and turns into like a dry heave ho. Then they're tracking their weights, tracking their reps. Then what happens is they get to a certain weight and they just can't do it anymore. I'm like, yeah, because you stopped loading the muscle 50 pounds ago, right? And then so the muscle's no longer getting any type of tension. So how do you track the progression of that, right? So just pay attention to that, move up a little bit, slow and steady. This is a marathon, it's not a sprint, okay? Remember that if actually wrote that right there, 104 pounds. Yeah, so last one, summary, guys. What progressive overload is every rep looks the exact same, and you can increase weights or reps each week with small amounts, and increasing torque at joint angles. That one I didn't talk too much about, but basically just means like that squat moment arm, just understanding that you can definitely call progression, increasing the muscle's ability to work within the set. An example, a simple one would be like adding heels to your squats. That technically is an actual progression, okay? Because if you're doing hack squats and your knee only goes this much forward, and then the next week it goes a little more forward, you're putting more tension through your quads. And if it's with the same weight, then that's progress. Okay. What progressive overload isn't, adding weight at all costs, even when the reps look like dog shit and lose their composure throughout the set. You count one because you made, sorry, yeah, because you made 10, but you actually made only 3 reps, right? Choosing exercises that don't align with your anatomy. Progressing until you inevitably bottleneck and then complaining about genetics. That's also not personal load, okay? Working in exercises that are above your skill grade, meaning muscle cannot do what it's intended to do. And that is probably the most common, okay? People doing things like, again, chest supported T-bar row. It's just something that I see very, very often with a lot of clients I deal with. And it's not a bad thing. None of this, just, you know, guys, disclaim, none of this means you're a bad person. None of this. And I don't, people take this stuff really seriously. It's not. It's so simple. We can fix this. It just means the muscle is just a little bit weak. We all have weak muscles, right? It just means when you gotta take a look at it, regress the position so we can make progress, then put you back into it. Voila, it's a magic trick, right? But if you're doing a T-bar row and you do not retract your scapula and it just moves, and so it's now gonna be an elbow extensor, elbow flexor exercise. Okay. And then you're gonna develop it's, again, it turns into a horrible exercise for your forearms. So you're in that, don't do it. skipping the necessary foundational stability, massive 1-2, and mobility work, and then inevitably bottleneck and plateauing, and then randomly changing exercises to bias things in greater accordance to your aesthetic goals. So, meaning like a person goes in this week, they have a plan, like Matt's goes in, and Coach Steve gave him some bicep work because Matt has the worst biceps on the earth. And then, see, look at that thing. He just shows him off. And then I'm like, hey, Bass, you need more biceps. So let's finally get those things to grow, bro. And then he goes in and he's like, no, I think I need more brachialis. And he starts pumping the forearms, right? Pumps the hammer curls. And then he's like, I'm also going to do some of these really weird, like twisting things to get some other thing. And he starts doing that and he wants a pump, right? That's not progressive overload. That's just novelty. It's cool. I love it. We all love a good pump, right? But it's important to understand that kind of stuff is not how we progress. Unless you have like some kind of, what do they call it? Like a person who can like, they can see memories. There's a certain word for it. You know what I'm talking about, right? When people can actually just like see that kind of stuff. Unless you have that photographic memory, there you go. Like unless you have that where you can literally be like, hey, I did a random exercise on September 14th and I know exactly how many weights and how many reps, then don't do anything like that. Just stick to the damn plan, right? What to see if you want to see progress? Work harder than you've ever were before. You will progress. Every single person progresses. There's so much crap in this world, guys. This is the last slide, so I really wanted to say, if you guys are on social media, one of the things that I think that leads people to not track properly is honestly social media being like so full of drugs. There's so much crap out there that makes people unaware of what they can physically achieve. And that doesn't mean that you can't achieve it. It just means that they're unaware of what they can achieve. And it makes them just try to think that they should be increasing at insane levels. And from what I see also, because of where I am in the social media area, like this is something that I see gravitate towards me a lot, is that people are trying to hack this. They're trying to get more and more results to the point where they can think they can progress like crazy. And then God forbid they don't, then they're failing. But I'm like, but you're progressing. It's like somebody coming over to one of us coaches and be like, I'm not losing weight. And then you check their weight progression and they've actually been dropping 2 pounds a week. And you're like, what do you mean you're not losing weight? Like, all data shows that you're losing weight. And they're like, well, not as much as I'd like. I'm like, what? So, do you want more? Okay, so hand out your arm, chop off their arm. Are you happy now? Like, what do you want? You want more weight? And then it sounds so funny, but that's what people do. They're like, I want more weight. So, what they'll do is they can't bench press 200, they can do only 150. They throw the 200 and it's like, and then it turns into that, and they're like, I did it. It's like, it doesn't make your muscles grow. Like, we gotta load it. So if you guys can take anything from away from this call, it'd just be like to understand that if you go through the exercises with the intention at hand and understanding what you're trying to do, that it becomes a really powerful tool to gauge your own performance and progression, okay? So, guys, any questions? I was able to wrap that up. I was pretty happy with that. Please, guys, pop off. Go
Got another
for
one
it.
for you. So just going back to talking about the slowing down. So if we're setting, so let's say we've got a, I don't know, bicep curl tempo set, should we be aiming with whatever weight we're choosing for those last two, three reps to be a slowdown on all three sets? Or, you know, because it's always like kind of that balance of form and tempo and the weight and making sure it's right. So should you be looking to get to the slower reps on all of those three sets, or just the last one, or tempo first, stick to tempo? Like, how do you find that balance between if it's a, you know, whatever the tempo is set, or, you know, should those last weights be really pushing you on each set where you are feeling that slowdown?
Yeah, so if it is a working set, don't waste any time not getting results. Okay? Meaning you're going to work. Don't hold back. You go, okay? And that means like if coach has you saying, hey, 3 sets of 5 to 8 reps on your bicep curls, do not leave it one in the tank. And if you chose poorly for your weight, then yeah, you're going to 20. Or if you chose poorly, stop the set early at like 3 or 4 reps and be like, I grabbed the wrong weight, and then grab another, right? Because a warm-up set is just something that's just getting you neurologically stimulated, or again, activating the sympathetic system, getting yourself winded up, or establishing movement patterns, right? And you want to do the minimum. Like our goal in a warm-up is to get through the warm-up. Does that make sense? Do the minimum required to do the set. Like if I'm doing deadlifts, I'll do like 2, 3, 4, 5. Right? So 4 warm-up set. Sir, 3, 2, 3, 4. And then I'm on my actual working set. And then I have 2 to 3 sets, right? And that's still 6 sets of deadlifts, right? But 2 working sets. And my warm-up sets, I do like 2, 3 reps. That's it. Because my brain doesn't need more than that. On my first, I might do a couple extra just because if I'm like feeling tight or if I'm feeling like the pattern isn't there or something like that, maybe a couple more just thinking about things, getting the things around it again. But other than that, the warm-up is just get them to do that. If you're in a working set though, do not save energy. Find a weight that works with you. And yeah, what I would actually say is something that I've heard before. You mentioned the words you said was like establishing form and making sure you're doing all the right stuff. I think that there's a time to let that go. And that doesn't mean don't be good in form. It means trust yourself, right? Like you go to work in your daily job and you don't have to remind yourself how to do your job. You just do your job now. It becomes like flow state, right? And that's the whole point of the training beforehand. Like I could get Mats into the gym and make him do anything, and he's gonna do it flawlessly. But that's just how Mats works now. He doesn't have to think about his form. He may think about his form in his warm-up sets, but when he's at work, he's at work. And his last rep, I promise you, will look better than his first. Because the muscle will be primarily like it'll be the only thing working. So it'll be like absolutely flawless. And then it'll just stop and he'll be like, I'm done. And then he'll just be like, okay, on to the next exercise. And that's the whole point of being effective, right? But I think that there's a lot there to kind of take away because a lot of people do that. I've heard that before. I had one client actually a little while back, somebody I worked with here in town, where she actually told me that in her own training, I never heard this before, she was actually like saving energy for like exercises later in this, and not only in the set, but in the day. So like meaning like I have like 10 exercises, I got to save energy for those last ones. I'm like, yeah, but they're down there because they're lower priority. I've put the stuff that's high priority here. So you go. But then the problem is she was not working hard there. So that means those exercises work, she's not seeing results in. And but the thing is, what people don't understand is that even though you're not seeing results, you're still accumulating fatigue, right? Which means work is still being done and you're getting tired still. So then now the stuff that she actually saved energy for, useless. And she's wondering why she's not seeing any raw results. I'm like, dude, you can't work like that. Go like freaking work. And then she's like, oh, okay. And then what happened is I got this text from her saying, I am so sore. I'm like, yeah, because you actually turned it on. You should have gotten rid of this DOMS like 2 months ago. But yeah, so it's like people just don't understand that. Oh, again, if you feel safe, man, just go. Of
Awesome, man. Thank you.
course. Any questions, guys? Okay, guys. Well, if you don't have questions, you can get off tonight. Thank you for popping in, Matt. Always a pleasure, buddy. I love when you pop in here. And guys, I hope that there's some stuff that you can take in your training. If there's any questions, always drop it in the group chat or even message me directly. And I would love to throw any answers or any help you need. Okay? Guys, have a great night. Talk soon.